Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Director's Cut. My name is Gabriel Lobato, and I'm joined by Sam Watkins and Brandon Bridgman. And on this episode
Hi.
Of... All right. And on this episode, I'm going to ignore that. On this episode, what we're going to be doing is breaking down the 10 best teen movies. Ignore Brandon. Take it away, Sam.
All right. Number 10 on our list, we have Easy A, starring Emma Stone. It's about a clean-cut high school student who relies on the school's rumor mill to advance her social standing.
Right.
What I appreciate about this movie, I mean, I just like Emma Stone in general. She's one of my favorite actresses, and this was really, like, her first leading role. I know I've seen the movie. It's not, like, fantastic. It's not memorable, but it's not, like, a bad movie.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, like, it's pure entertainment value. It's not anything to get necessarily excited about. What's the actor from Friends that's featured on it? Sorry?
Lisa Kudrow. She plays the school counselor.
Yeah, Lisa Kudrow. I feel like Lisa Kudrow always kind of finds herself in these roles where she ever since Friends, it's always been like somewhat of a forgettable role. Like, and it's not that she did a bad job as the teacher in that movie. It's just that it's not anything to get excited about. And I thought Emma Stone's performance in the movie was pretty good, but it was just whatever.
Hello? Sorry, I think my internet connection cut out or something. Gabe was in the middle of a sentence and then just stopped.
I saw Sam's face freeze.
No, you
yeah, the whole thing you froze. I think the whole call froze. Okay, that's fine.
I'm gonna say cut right there. Now you know where to cut.
Okay, should I just repeat everything I just said?
I guess.
Okay, I was gonna say, I feel like Lisa Kudrow always kind of finds herself in these forgettable roles. It's she always like does a good job in the roles that she's given, but I feel like she's always given weak dialogue, and she kills it every time. But in Emma Stone, it's definitely not Emma Stone's best work, but I think it's definitely pure entertainment value. It's a fun watch.
For sure.
All right. Emma Stone, pretty. Yes, that's all I have to add to that conversation. And I would like to talk about our next pick on the list, number 9, 21 Jump Street. This is a 2012 film starring Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill. It's about two lackluster police officers who have known each other since high school. And they mess up on the job and get sent into an undercover program in a church on 21 Jump Street, where they got to be high school students once again and take down a drug ring. It's very nice, very nice.
Yeah, well, what I like about this movie is that this was a huge step forward for Channing Tatum. Because I think before this film, he wasn't really known for anything big. And at this point, Jonah Hill was, you know, like starting to kill it in the game because he had releases like Superbad, and he was featured in movies like
Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall and the other one, 40-Year-Old Virgin, with a minor role in that film. And like, he was starting to get up there and becoming a household name. But did Channing Tatum do Magic Mike at that point?
I think that was afterwards. It might have been 2011 though.
Magic Mike 2012, so
same year.
So this was a big year for Channing Tatum when 21 Jump Street dropped as a movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was a very big step
forward. I really like the writing and directing done by, actually, I don't know if they wrote it, but I know they directed it, Phil Lord and Chris Miller of Spider-Verse fame.
Mm-hmm.
Also of Clone High fame. They are very talented dudes, and it really shows.
Right. And I think 21 Jump Street is like the premier example of what a good reboot looks like.
It's, oh, yeah.
Yes.
Because there have been other ones, but like Chips, I think there was like I mean, like the Baywatch movie, but none of them are really hold up to 21 Jump Street.
Right, 21 Jump Street. In fact, if you didn't know 21 Jump Street, because 21 Jump Street to begin with is already an obscure title from the past, a lot of people probably didn't even know 21 Jump Street was a thing before the actual Channing Tatum Jonah Hill combo released. And it's just an example of what a good reboot looks like. Everything about the movie, it's done in an original way, and it's not pushy. You know, it doesn't shove nostalgia down your throat. It complements it, you know?
Right.
It hits all the right notes, so.
The next movie on our list is American Pie, which it didn't quite start the, like, raunchy comedy genre, but I think it really perfected it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it paved the way for movies like Superbad to really do well, and really any of the raunchy teen films. You can just list off just a number of movies that took inspiration from American Pie. You had Wet Hot American Summer come out of
Eurotrip.
Yeah, Eurotrip, Sex Drive. I mean, I think I already said Superbad, but all of these films were just direct descendants of American Pie. And without American Pie, we wouldn't have that, you know, that genre as a whole.
Right.
So it was really good. And then I think the problem with the American Pie thing is that it eventually became a series.
Yeah, the spinoffs aren't good.
Yeah.
They're really not.
They're very bad.
Another one, but it's like all girls instead of guys.
Mm-hmm. And they became caricatures of the original movie.
It's like there's a movie from the early 2000s called Not Another Teen Movie that parodied American Pie. And now it's like the new American Pie movies are parodies of the parody.
Right, exactly. It's like it's become so meta at this point, but without that very first one, we wouldn't have any of it to begin with. So definitely a solid teen flick. You know, definitely top 10. Let's see here. Next one we have on the list, Perks of Being a Wallflower, a little bit more of a deeper cut in terms of complexity. Yeah, definitely a little bit more introspective of a movie. Less.
We're about to get kind of dark.
Very dark, pretty dark film, but definitely introspective. Definitely makes you kind of look at yourself. Not so much of a raunchy teen flick like our previous entry, but you know.
No. Yeah, a good cast though. A really good cast.
Mm-hmm.
Logan Lerman.
Ezra Miller.
Ezra Miller, Emma Watson, Paul Rudd.
Yeah, all of these great actors, and all of which killed it, you know. I think they definitely did really good with the dialogue that they were given, and the movie in no way is like it's not preachy in any way. It definitely presents its topic with a solid level of, you know, respect and discretion, while at the same time making its point.
And what I really appreciate about it is that it's based off a book. And the author of the book actually directed the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're getting like his vision, like the creator's vision, and it's not being clouded by like studio execs or anything like that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you don't get any of that. You don't. You get full range creativity when it comes to this movie. You get the original idea, the original vision.
And yes. And shout out, they got some good LGBT representation in this movie too.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
I don't really think that's a spoiler. So yeah, Ezra Miller did really good in this movie, and this is before the whole choking incident, so you can still watch it.
This movie.
Yeah.
Let's see here, 2012. So I don't necessarily know if you can say Perks of Being a Wallflower was necessarily revolutionary when it comes to LGBT representation. Given that it's more of a recent release. However, I will say that it definitely doesn't, it's definitely not a step back in terms of LGBT representation. It definitely makes its point clear, you know, definitely, you know, presents everything in a good light.
It was Emma Watson's first movie after Harry Potter, and it really proved that she wasn't going to get like typecast as Hermione.
It proved the versatility of several actors. I think especially for characters like Paul Rudd, because I think Paul Rudd a lot of times is put into like very comedic characters, you know, especially with you know, I just, what's some of his other movies he's done? I'm trying to think of one of the more recent films I've seen with him in it. He's a businessman.
I mean, Ant-Man.
Yeah, I guess you could say Ant-Man, but
doesn't really lead that often though.
No, right, exactly. We don't see him as taking charge of a cast. But
yeah.
I thought it was a really good film. Most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
So Sammy, I think you're up.
Yeah, next on our list is 10 Things I Hate About You, released in 1999. It's a modern retelling of William Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew. Stars Julia Stiles and Heath Ledger, and it is also Heath Ledger's first American movie.
Yeah, this is one of the movies that really proved to me, in my opinion, that Heath Ledger could act, because my first introduction to Heath Ledger was Knight's Tale, and then after that it was The Dark Knight. So I'd really only seen him in two contexts, in right. action films. And which is hilarious, because most people actually knew him for 10 Things I Hate About You in Knight's Tale, and kind of wrote him off as that like lover boy persona. Didn't think he could pull off a Knight's Tale, or not a Knight's Tale, but Dark Knight.
Yeah. But yeah, because like when it came out that he was playing Joker, I don't think people took that seriously.
Right, exactly. And it was, yeah, and it was because of movies like 10 Things I Hate About You that people definitely wrote him off as that kind of actor. But this was my second exposure to him in a genre like that. So it really proved to me, in my opinion, that he could act, because it put him in a different context. Yeah.
Also, a quick shout out to Joseph Gordon-Levitt for being one of the most underrated actors of our time.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Very good.
Definitely. I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt's that had to be around the time that 70s show was going on, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt was getting minor roles as well, right?
Yeah, that was because he was like 18 when that movie came out. So that was probably around that. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So
that might have been actually around the time he was on that 70s show.
Yeah, exactly.
The first or second season, and that started in 98. So.
Oh, yeah. So. This was definitely a stepping stone for a lot of actors that would become like eventually become really big. Also, let's just say it's a good romantic comedy.
Yeah, it's a real good.
It's movie. Very good.
Good, like feel good movie, comfort movie.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like it pulls from its roots really well. Like it just like it takes that. It has that like 80s kind of cheesiness to it, you know. But at the same time, you can feel that it's also got that indie vibe to it at the same time, like. It's just a little bit of everything in all the right ways. Just a really solid, and it's not, and I wouldn't say it's introspective either. It doesn't really make you think, but entertainment value definitely up there.
Yeah. Cat be like, I'm a hardcore rocker girl and I listen to Letters to Cleo.
Oh yeah. That is super stereotypical. Super stereotypical.
Yeah.
But I mean, hey, it worked out for the best. I think it was a good, I think she killed it.
Yeah,
I haven't really seen her in anything else though.
Yeah, I've only seen her in one other thing. It was like a supporting role. She was in Silver Linings Playbook.
Oh, right, with Silver Linings Playbook. That's with
and Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the name. Yeah.
All right. Next on the list, we got Superbad, released in 2007, starring once again Jonah Hill.
Superbad.
No, we don't.
No, we don't. I'm wrong.
What list are you looking
at? I'm looking at the cheat sheet.
No, the top list.
Who? What's that for this one?
Next
yeah, right. Next on the list is Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It's my turn. Next on the list is Ferris Bueller's Day Off, released in 1986, starring Matthew Broderick, Alan Ruck, Mia Sara, and Jennifer Grey. This movie is about one Mr. Ferris Bueller skipping school. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't remember this movie that much. I probably should have let Sam talk about this.
I mean, I can talk about this a little bit. I would say this deserves to be right in the middle of our list. It's nowhere near number one, but it's nowhere being on the bottom of the list. It's all around a classic. It's not too introspective, but it provides enough thought-provoking context in the story arc of Ferris Bueller's friend. What's his name? I'm forgetting his name.
The guy who looks like a frog.
His name was Cameron.
Cameron, right, exactly. It provides enough of a story arc with Cameron's character that it becomes, you know, thought-provoking enough.
Yeah, like, it still, like, acknowledges certain issues that, like, teens go through, but it doesn't, like, it doesn't have, like, a lecturing tone to it.
Exactly, and actually, this will be the first time we're featuring John Hughes on our list.
Yes.
And it's one of his most recognizable films. I mean, I think when it comes to teen movies and really John Hughes in general, Ferris Bueller's Day Off is never left out of the discussion. You know, it really, none of John Hughes' films are left out of the discussion, but I think some are definitely recognized more than others. And Ferris Bueller's Day Off is like quintessential to any teen movie list.
Also, yeah, I mean, 1986, fourth wall breaks were not really a common thing.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. In cinema or in like television, and Ferris Bueller like had a bunch of those.
Right, exactly. And it was super goofy in all the right ways. Like there were moments of slapstick and moments of complete seriousness.
That running scene is just iconic when he's running trying to make it back home.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Completely also, iconic.
The random dance music scene when he's in the parade.
You had to suspend your disbelief a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
yeah, you know, and the pacing of the movie is good because you never really know what he's going to do next in the movie. Because they set it up to where he's just a cool kid at high school who's skipping school. But
he's skipping school. They're going to Chicago for a day.
Right, but you're not expecting the antics they're going to get into.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just keeps topping itself with each level of absurdity. And it's not so absurd that it becomes ridiculous, but at the same time, it's absurd enough to be like, whoa, this is, you know, a really cool kid. He's stolen a Ferrari. He's, you know, inserted himself into a parade.
Matthew Broderick is very charismatic. It's kind of hard to believe that he was on the short list for Breaking Bad.
Oh, like, really?
Yeah. He's underrated too. He's not really like a serious performer, but.
All right. And who was Matthew Broderick's female co-star?
Oh, yeah. Her name's Mia Sara. I think that I don't think she had a very long or successful career.
Yeah. I was going to say, I haven't really seen her in any other movies besides Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
It was in Legend with Tom Cruise.
I've never heard of it.
Oh, don't want to talk about Legend. Legend is terrible. That's a terrible film. That's with
who was in it though.
Who was the guy from Home Alone 2?
Oh, I don't know.
That played the door hop at the hotel.
Yeah. Hey, Gabe, how am I supposed to know that?
Oh, Rob Schneider.
It is not Rob Schneider.
Yes, it is. Home Alone 2 marks one of Rob Schneider's first roles, where he played a bellhop at the Plaza Hotel where Kevin's staying. Get owned with facts and logic. This is right from HollywoodReporter.com.
That's the same one from Rocky Picture Horror Show.
Never seen Rocky Picture Horror Show.
Oh, Tim Curry?
Yes, Tim Curry. I was going to say, Tim Curry plays...
Oh, It.
Tim Curry plays It and also the Devil in Legend.
Blanking on the name, Rocky Horror Picture.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool time.
Blanking on the character's name, but he's in
Rocky. And this is all because Mia Sara was in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah, now we're talking about we're talking about Tim Curry. Okay.
I guess Mia Sara's career was
not what she wanted it to be.
No, because yes. Now we're talking about other actors when her name pops up.
A girl was in the movie with that person. Yeah.
All right, Gabe, I think it's your turn to take our next entry on the list.
Our next entry on the list is Edge of 17 featuring Hailee Steinfeld. It was released in 2016. She co-stars with Blake Jenner and Woody Harrelson. Woody Harrelson plays a teacher at her school who essentially provides like the emotional support she needs throughout the movie. Let's see here. Nadine, who comes of age while dealing with a difficult relationship with her mother and the recent news that her best friend is dating her estranged older brother, along with the guidance of her sarcastic history teacher, aka Woody Harrelson. More introspective than the other ones on our list, but I'd say definitely sprinkles in bits of comedy here and there.
Easy.
Yeah.
Like,
honestly, now that I'm sorry, Sam. Honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, like, I think, like, movie wise, if you just like take out the comedy aspect, I think Edge of 17 is probably my number two. But our number two still trumps Edge of 17 just based off the comedy aspect. So,
and our number three is very similar to Edge of 17. I just think that it did what Edge of 17 did better.
But better, yeah.
Right, and Edge of 17, I think, is like just it just kind of goes to show it's kind of like in the same vein of Perks of Being a Wallflower, where it's like it shows what a good introspective teen movie is. I think it definitely presents like the idea of like teenage feelings in a very like realistic way. I think one of the things that a lot of teen movies suffer from is the fact that they don't portray teenage emotions correctly, because the people that are acting in those roles are already adults, and the people that are writing the scripts for it are way past their teenage years. So it doesn't really provide like a good perspective on what, you know, teenage emotions looks like. And Edge of 17 in comparison does that really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just kind of sits everybody down and says, hey, this is, you know, this is a good introspective movie. It definitely provides, it's definitely a female perspective though.
Oh yeah. And I mean, we have Easy A on this list, but there aren't that many movies that like do the female perspective well.
No.
Yeah.
In like a non-chick flicky type way.
Right, exactly. Because usually when it comes to female perspectives in teenage films, it's where the main character, the protagonist, their personality is girl.
Yeah.
Like, but Edge of 17 doesn't do that. It does it how an actual teenage girl would act in the situations that they're in. I don't know.
I just like Hailee Steinfeld in general. She's a good actress. I mean, True Grit. She was nominated for Best Actress at the Oscars. She was like
Bumblebee.
Yeah, Bumblebee.
Yes, good movie.
14 years old.
Mm-hmm. And then what's the other one? She's in a show that's on the Apple platform.
Oh yeah, it's like a period piece, I want to say, right?
It's what?
I want to say it's like a period piece.
It is a period piece, but it's like a weird
She plays Emily Dickinson in Dickinson.
Yes, but it's like done in a very like almost comedic, rebellious fashion.
And almost like a coming of age story, almost.
Right, right. But she kills it.
Mm-hmm.
She does her thing. Hailee Steinfeld definitely has an effect on her audience. She definitely knows how to play the roles that she's given. I think she knows how to play herself. I think that's why she's such a good actor, because she knows how to, you know. She doesn't necessarily act the character, she acts herself, and because of that, all of her characters seem fresh, yet they also seem like her. And I think that's a very strong thing to have. Also, we haven't even covered the fact that Woody Harrelson is in Edge of 17, and he's a phenomenal actor.
Yeah, he steals the show when he's on screen.
No, for real. And especially in movie, he shows time and time again that he can act in so many different settings. Like I think he was in No Country.
He was in
No Men.
You get like the
Zombieland,
Three Billboards, Natural Born Killers, but then you get a performance like he gave in Edge of 17.
Yeah, exactly. He's just all over the place. He shows that he can really work the screen in a way that many actors cannot. And he compliments Hailee Steinfeld. It's not even like, it's not like he's overbearing, you know?
Yeah, for me, I think he's the most iconic part of that movie. Like, I feel like him and Hailee Steinfeld did like equally as good, but I just remember the scenes with him more than the scenes with her. But it's also been 3 years since I've seen the movie, so
he's like a more iconic actor too.
Well, yeah. I think also the dialogue between him and Haley Steinfeld in those scenes is just so
good.
It's perfectly matched. It's a like give and take.
Yeah.
And it's you get the teenage raw emotions of Haley Steinfeld matched with the witty,
yeah,
grown, weathered adult actor of Woody Harrelson, and it just creates this synergy that I think it creates beautiful on-screen scenes. But yeah.
All right, and moving on to number three, we have Lady Bird, starring Saoirse Ronan and Timothy Chalamet, Laurie Metcalf. we'll get to that in a minute. It follows Christine Lady Bird McPherson as she comes of age in Sacramento, California. It was it's Greta Gerwig's directorial debut. She also directed Little Women in 2019, and it has attracted the most awards out of any movie on our list. It was nominated for 5 Oscars, and I would say that it's probably the most like down to earth, like realistic high school movie out there.
Mm-hmm. And here's what I like about this movie: there is so many different perspectives in this film. You've got like the school that they go to, which provides a very clear-cut conservative religious viewpoint. You've got LGBT representation in this movie. You have real raw teenage emotions portrayed on screen. You've got cliques. You've got the feeling of loneliness and abandonment and joy and trying to fit in. It's just all the right mixture of all the right stuff.
And it's very beautifully written too.
Yes, my favorite thing about this movie is also my least favorite thing about this movie. One Mr. Timothy Chalamet, who plays possibly the most hateable character in all of media.
Kyle.
So, Brandon, please explain, why do you hate Timothy Chalamet?
The actor or the character he plays?
The actor. Because I have a lot of...
Oh, he just has a really ugly face, but the character he plays, oh boy, the character he plays is just...
Takes advantage of...
Yes, he takes advantage of people. He is very, very manipulative. He does a really good job of making you hate him.
Yeah.
Like, awesome. Very good.
He's a good actor. But
yes.
His character is like...
I think...
Very easy to hate.
Right. I think what he... He plays a character that's not unfamiliar to teen movies, but he does it in his own way. And I think that's what makes his presence on screen strong, especially since the fact that he's not exactly like a co-star either.
No, he's
it's technically a minor role.
Yeah.
But it really steals the show.
Mm-hmm. Like, you feel his presence.
Like, he really wasn't a nobody until 2017 though.
Mm-hmm. No, he was, and he's going to be in the new upcoming Dune, which I'm personally excited for.
Today to October 2021.
What's that, Sam?
Got pushed back just today, and now it comes out in October of next year.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, that's unfortunate.
Yes, Lady Bird is our number 3. Very good. Now I will talk about number 2, and this time I'll actually get it right. This time it actually is Superbad. Released in 2007, starring Jonah Hill, Michael Cera, and Emma Stone. Two of these people have already been on our list, actually, in starring roles. So that's pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Superbad is the probably like in my top 3 movies of all time. It's my favorite high school movie of all time.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best teen comedy of all time. It's very good. It's very, 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 very good. And it's about two codependent high school seniors, and they're forced to deal with separation anxiety after their plan to stage a booze-soaked party goes away. And mm-hmm. So they spend the night... Basically, it's just them spending the night trying to get alcohol. And it's very funny. It's very good. It has a lot. It is a comedy, but it also has a deeper theme about friendship, mm-hmm. and endings and all that good stuff. Closure. Mm-hmm. It's really nice.
This is, I would say, the direct descendant of American Pie. this is, and for how much American Pie laid the groundwork for raunchy teen comedies, Superbad was the masterpiece that came out of it. It's essentially what American Pie was trying to be, in my opinion. And I don't know if that's too harsh of a thing to say, but I think it, wherever American Pie lacked as a movie, Superbad picked up the slack.
Mm-hmm.
It said, this is how we're going to fix those problems. See, with American Pie, you found yourself in situations where it wasn't relatable. There wasn't relatable dialogue because it was trying too hard to be funny at some points. But then you have Superbad that picks up the slack and says, no, these are how teens actually interact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is it provides real relationships between people. And I think it did it really well.
Yeah. And it really, I mean, it definitely launched the careers of Jonah Hill and Emma Stone. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Michael Cera did Arrested Development before, but
I feel like most people know him from Superbad, like Juno. Both those were in the same year too, I'm pretty sure. Both those were in 2007, right? Or was Juno in 2009?
I think Juno was a little later.
Okay, well, still, point still stands. Superbad, Juno, Scott Pilgrim, those are like his three iconic roles. Like, I didn't even know he was in Arrested Development until I started watching it.
Well, yeah, like, I mean, like, he had already acted before, but he wasn't really, like, a big name.
Right, yeah.
And we got to talk about Seth Rogen and Bill Hader for a second.
Oh my God. Probably one of the best subplots in any comedy.
I think, yeah, that was another thing about Superbad. It presented multiple story arcs in such a masterful way, and then combined them, like, it met back up at one point.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, it was three separate stories. You got the story of McLovin, you've got the story of Michael Cera and Jonah Hill's characters, and then you've also got Seth Rogen and Bill Hader's characters combined with McLovin's at one point. And then that separates, and it's such a good switching between different characters and showing how one night, like the perspective of one night from a bunch of different people, beautifully edited together. Like, you get a little bit of everybody all the time, and it's phenomenal. But yeah. And then Seth Rogen, and really any movie that involves itself with Judd Apatow usually a success, because Judd Apatow really knows how to produce a comedy. I haven't seen any other filmmaker besides Judd Apatow produce comedies to the caliber that he has.
Yeah, I think he's definitely produced a lot more than people realize.
Oh, for sure. Like,
I used to think, oh, he's the guy that makes all the Seth Rogen movies. Like, if Seth Rogen's in it, he made it. But it's much more than that.
And no. In fact, I'm pretty sure he was involved with Step Brothers, which is also a classic.
Oh, that movie's great.
Star and Hot Rod, I think.
Oh, Hot Rod. Yes, absolutely.
Hot Rod. So Hot Rod good. Cool beans.
Involved with Pineapple Express. This is the End.
Yeah.
No, I don't like that movie. That movie's bad.
Most recently, The King of Staten Island, which I still haven't seen.
I haven't either. I've heard it's good, though.
But yeah, I feel like Judd Apatow's definitely got that producer magic touch.
Yeah.
As soon as he gets involved with a film, he makes sure that it turns out good. Because all of his films have been at least relatively commercially successful. And not to mention many of them have become classics. They're household names. I don't know a single teen nowadays that hasn't seen Superbad.
Mm-hmm.
Superbad is just so, it's just so there. It's just so classic. And I mean, I feel like Judd Apatow, without realizing it, we've probably mentioned, have we mentioned any other films on this list that have involved themselves with Judd Apatow?
I don't
know. I don't think so, actually.
Really?
I mean, I don't think.
Doesn't do a lot of teen.
He doesn't do necessarily teen-centric movies, but I think he's versatile enough to where, when it came his time to make a teen movie, he hit it right.
While we're still on Superbad, quick shout-out to a movie we had to cut from the list, Booksmart, starring Jonah Hill's sister, Beanie Feldstein, calling it a girl version of Superbad is a little reductive, but I wanted to bring it up because it's a good movie.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Yeah. I think anybody that's involved with Jonah Hill, whether that be a family member or a close friend, they all make really good quality content. They provide very good on-screen characters, very good charisma. But yeah.
All right. Number one. I'm sure a lot of you saw this coming, but we got The Breakfast Club.
Woo.
Anthony Michael Hall, Emilio Estevez, Judd Nelson, Ally Sheedy. It follows five students in high school in Saturday detention who don't seem to be alike. They're all from different cliques, but when they get to know each other, they realize that they all go through the same stuff, and they don't have to be different. You know, they're all the same, really. They all go through the same problems.
Mm-hmm. I honestly don't have anything to say about this movie that I feel like hasn't already been said. Like, this is one of the most iconic films of all time, not even just high school. So it's kind of hard to talk about it. I feel like there are some things that aged a little poorly, like how they strip away. I don't remember her character's name. It's like the basket case. I don't remember her character's name, but they kind of strip away all of her personality and just turn into a second Molly Ringwald at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, I just spoiled it. But I mean, who hasn't seen
the Breakfast Club? You know, the thing that like she has to look a certain way
to be
not like attractive.
Yeah, I don't like that at all. Mm-hmm. And I kind of spoiled the ending to the movie. But like, I mean, who hasn't seen the Breakfast Club? Like,
and
it's Bender, so like, huge.
Because when I first saw it, I thought that Bender was like, I didn't really think it was that bad. And I watched it again when I was a little older, and I was like, wow. This guy is not a good dude at all.
Yeah, right. he's kind of bad. I think the only good person here is maybe Judd Nelson. Who's the nerd? Which one's the nerd guy?
Oh, that's Anthony Michael Hall.
Anthony Michael Hall, I think he's like pretty much the only. Because Judd Nelson, I'm pretty sure, is Bender.
Yeah, that's Bender.
I thought this movie was a excellent way to put a spin on stereotypes.
Mm-hmm. Because that's true.
It really took this stereotype idea, which I think we still see nowadays in school with like,
yeah,
when you pick and choose people from cliques and you put them together, and it just really shows like the level of just like the level of an intensity, I guess you could say, like the interactions that they would have. It accurately displays what teen emotions look like, the feeling of isolation. I think this is a common feeling that a lot of teenagers have these days, of not really fitting in, kind of trying hard, putting on this persona to like insert yourself, trying to find your place in society. And it does that beautifully. I haven't seen a film that has done it like that, you know. And it's our second John Hughes film besides Ferris Bueller on this list. John Hughes is like the king of teen movies. Really, we could have done this, I think, this top 10 list, and it only be John Hughes films, because they all hit teen issues the right way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think these are the only two John Hughes films I've seen. I know he did Pretty in Pink and 16 Candles.
I haven't seen either of those.
I haven't seen either of those. I know one of them hasn't aged well, and I can't remember which one it was.
I have seen both of those. If I'm going to be honest, I still like 16 Candles, so I'm going to assume it's Pretty in Pink.
Oh, I know there's one with like some like sexual harassment type things. I can't remember like which one it is.
That would be 16 Candles.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, both of them really.
I mean, it was the 80s.
I was gonna say it was the 80s. It doesn't make it
excuse, yeah.
But at the same time, it was like, in the context.
It was like funny in the 80s, I guess.
Right, but I mean, even if they technically don't age well, these are still considered classics.
There are certain elements of them that haven't aged well.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think.
All right. Well, I think that's our list, right? With everything. All right.
I would say so. Thank you guys for joining us on Director's Cut. tune in next time for when we discuss whatever we discuss next time. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and be sure to check out the other podcasts that are featured on FHN today. And thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time. Goodbye.